Network, what's going on? It is I, Adam Juhan, again, your host of the Pilot Network podcast. I am solo today, and I am doing a little something new, a little pre-introduction, if you will. There will be an intro of Bobby Quinn and Raven Spatial, who the podcast is all about, here shortly. And if you can get through the first few minutes of me staggering my way through discussing what Bobby is trying to accomplish and also what parts are governed by the FAA, because apparently I don't know those very well, and I didn't seem to be able to get that point across. If you can get through that, it is a fantastic podcast that's going to offer you and people that you know out there a lot of benefit going forward. I'm really excited about bringing Raven Spatial on to the Pilot Network team. That's right. They are kind of going to be a partner sponsor with us going forward. Yeah, this is the big introduction. So if you're interested in Raven Spatial, hit them up at ravenspatial.com. And I hope you enjoy Bobby Quinn and all about drone life. Network, what is going on? It is I, Adam Juhan, saying hello again from my new, brand new sound studio recording booth or little place that I can go and take a hiatus from what we know as quarantine 2020. I hope everybody's doing well out there in network land. I have a very special guest today because this is something new, something we've never talked about before, not only in the network, but definitely not on the podcast. And it's really exciting for me to introduce to you Bobby Quinn, the founder, CEO, president emeritus, owner, director, whatever you want to label you want to throw on there. He's all of them. Of Raven Spatial, and he's going to tell us all about what Raven Spatial is and how this could be a boon for a lot of you hobbyists and pilots out there. Bobby, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Adam.
Absolutely. It was super exciting. We had a mutual friend who introduced us, and that mutual friend said, Adam, you gotta talk to this guy. And I said, okay, well, tell me a little bit about him so maybe we can get him on the podcast or just chit-chat or whatever. And he said, so it's drone stuff. And I go, oh, okay, drone stuff. And, you know, I said, maybe that's kind of interesting. And I said, in these times right now, anything's better than nothing as far as, well, how you're making money or whatever you're doing for a living. But the thing that really threw me for a loop was when my friend, our mutual friend, said, I talked to him for like 8 hours and I understood a grand total of about 5 minutes of what he was saying. And I go, oh, so this dude's really smart on top of it all. And I said, I got to have him on. And then we had a what I thought was going to be a 5 minute conversation turned into 2 hours of learning all about Raven Spatial and what Bobby's trying to do in the world of photogrammetry. I think that's one of the words you told me about, and all sorts of GIS and drone technology usages, part 108 flying, all this kind of interesting stuff that's out there. And I was like, dude, we got to have you on. We got to get this in now. And he jumped at it. And again, Bobby, I want to thank you. So let's jump right in here. So let's talk about your personal professional history. Let's kind of hit that up. How did this whole thing start? And how did you become I want to start over again. Raven Spatial, how did you start and what is Raven Spatial?
Thanks, Adam. So a little quick history on me. I'm 13-year Air Force vet, enlisted swine. I always wanted to be a pilot. Fun fact for me, I have a kidney disease. It's familial. So I was told by the head nephrologist of the Air Force that I wasn't going to fly in the military, to get out and pursue my career as civilian. So I ended up with three different AFSCs. I was a cop. AFSC is an Air Force specialty code. If nobody's, you know, Air Force is listening. So started as a cop, went to weather forecasting, and then got out of active duty, went to the reserves as a aircraft mechanic working in avionics. Ended up at MacDill. So Adam and I have been in the same unit, similar units. He's flying and I was the guy on the ground.
Same wing. We were there. Just we kind of missed each other by a couple of years.
Couple years, yeah. I have a lot of respect for the military pilots. Definitely what I wanted to do, what I was geared up for. But life has a different path for you sometimes. So I got out and I contracted a little bit. I went to work for Blackwater some for about 14 months and came back, and that's when I joined the reserve and went to the avionics side of the house. Took private flight lessons and got my private pilot's license and started flying a little bit, building up some time. And I realized quickly in about 2009 that a private pilot can own an aerial imagery company. Mm-hmm. And this is like in one of the AOPA magazines. You can own an aerial imagery company. It was about this chick that went out and got her license and started flying. And a lot of people had a problem with it. They were like, well, that's a commercial license use. And there was actually one of the gray areas where you can actually own just a private pilot's license and the company. So, okay, dope. So I did that. The picture behind me is a Skyway. I did a lot of like the local area shoots working with realtors and roofing companies. And I learned quickly that there was a need for it. And I learned that there's a problem with customer ordering of those, the areas that they want. So we go back and forth in like 6 emails per customer and say, I want this area. I would send them a picture of a map and say, okay, so this is the area you want, you know, confirm that. Long story short, taking thousands of images, I was like, man, if I knew how to spatially archive these images, I could make a really cool company. I didn't know that. I had no idea. But at that point, it was sowing the seed for, like, if I could learn geospatial, if I could learn something about spatial databases and indexing, I could be really powerful in this because I'm now living the problem, right?
Sure.
Then drones came in, and I couldn't compete with a drone guy charging $150 per property when I'm charging $500 to shoot a property from a fixed wing aircraft. Obsolescence came, like many feel in the tech industry. Mm-hmm. And I dropped the company, and I went to work for a company flying UAVs in Afghanistan for a total of 2 years at that company. We were doing intel surveillance reconnaissance, and then ended up doing counter IED work, flying routes over there in Afghanistan from the Tiger Shark, this 500-pound payload aircraft. So it wasn't too tiny, it wasn't too big, but we were flying in the AOR. It was a super boring job. You get the airplane for 8 hours, you're doing nothing. So over there, I taught myself geospatial, the same thing that I wish I had learned when I was in the aerial imagery company. And I kind of knew, like, okay, now I'm in the drone industry. Now I want to apply everything that I've learned in the past and take my past and grow and build on it. So long story short, did that for 2 years, came back, finished off my undergrad at Embry-Riddle. So I'm a Riddle guy. I know there's a lot of jokes about that.
Oh, I don't know, Riddle or Academy dudes, you know, it's, you are what you eat, I guess. So
yeah, I was a worldwide grad too. So, I didn't even go to the Daytona campus, which is probably like 10 degrees of worse, jokes coming my way.
Don't worry about it, man. Right. Besides, they're all going to be working for you someday anyways. So that's,
I don't know. We'll see, So what I did was I ended up getting a job, with Digital Globe, which is a big satellite company. They own a constellation of 6 satellites. They're taking imagery for Google Earth. So when you go into Google Maps and Google Earth, you see a really high resolution aerial imagery or satellite imagery. A lot of that's from Digital Globe. My job there was a geospatial analyst. So I was, using that imagery to learn about the Earth and put together products where you're measuring the Earth and all that. So now things are starting to play together. And it was at that point that I realized, okay, so we can task from a company unit or a government unit, we can task satellites and aircraft to take imagery where we want, when we want, right? Because somebody owns those assets. So we can get an agreement with that person, or they can be a customer. We can say, hey, we need that imagery for that area at this time. You may or may not get it, but that was cool to be able to do that. The problem you have this payload or camera really high and you don't get the image or resolution that you need on the ground. Mm-hmm. So, wouldn't it be cool if we were able to get in closer and we were able to task drones, like consumer drones, because they're everywhere, or even better, smartphones. How do we get imagery on the ground in places we want all around the world? And there's nothing out there at the time, 2015, nothing out there. So I started putting together this idea. And we can talk about it a little bit more, but that's how I pitched it to Digital Globe. They said they didn't want to do it. I got a IP release and my NDA with them and started my company. And now I've built this platform where we're able to have customers request imagery for a specific area that they want. And we find people in that local area that serve in the gig economy with a drone or with a smartphone to go collect the imagery for us.
So you just said, in a very short order, a giant brain full of information, because there's so much to unpack there. So as a commercial Part 121 and a military pilot, I have limited, and by limited, I mean zero, actual experience with drones, except for my my brother-in-law. I got to fly his drone around a little bit, and it was pretty cool. And I was like, oh, that was fun, you know? And I thought maybe one day I'll pick one up for $100 and zip it around the park. My daughter loves the guy who flies the remote control airplane over there, loves watching that. And I said, okay, well, the drone would be kind of fun to do too. I think you touched on a couple of things here that really made me, I mean, you summed everything up so nicely, but you touched on some stuff that I want to really delve deeper into. So you're going to have essentially an on-demand capability for aerial imagery from drones and from land-based cell phone type picture stuff. Now, so let's say I've got my brother-in-law's drone and I go on the app, whatever, I upload and I get a ping, hey, you want to come take a picture of this house or whatever that's for sale? Yeah, sure. Okay. Go do it. It's that simple. Like I can just go and take my $200, $300 drone that I got off of Amazon. That's got some really cool high res, because everything's high res now. Take a shot down the road and upload it to the server, Raven Spatial server, and boom, we have you have aerial imagery from me. I get paid out, and you get it to the end user.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. I would say the only thing there to tweak a little bit is the price of the drones. Generally, the drones that are ideal for us are all DJI. DJI owns about 84% of the consumer drone market.
Okay.
So the consumer quality drone market, we're looking at like the Mavic Pro. I've actually got one right here. I'll grab it and show you.
Yeah, sure.
This one doesn't have a battery in it, but you can see the size and the shape. This is a foldable drone. But the Mavic Pro, Mavic 1, $700 right now.
Okay.
If you buy it on eBay or Amazon, and about $850 if you get the extra battery for it. But that right there is capable of amazing imagery, right? The upgrade to this is the new Mavic 2 Pro, this guy right here, which this with a whole battery pack, the Fly More pack from DJI is $2,000.
Okay.
They both fly amazing. They're both exceptional tools. And I consider them tools, not toys, right?
Yeah.
But the image quality is just, it's second to none on these two drones. We go into the Phantoms, Phantom 4s, the bigger white ones that are more traditional that people kind of think of when they think of the drone. They don't fold. But yeah, we start at the $700 range, and the majority of the drones that are out there in the Part 107 world registered with the FAA are between the Mavic Pro, Mavic 2 Pro now, or Mavic Pro 2, and then the Phantom 4,
okay,
which are all ideal for what we're trying to do.
Okay. And I think I said Part 108 earlier. I meant Part 107. I don't remember. I got you. I don't even remember what Part 108 is in the FARs. I probably should know that, but I don't. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. So let's back up a little bit. So yeah, what was your, so when you said you should have done GIS a little bit earlier, you kind of started after the fact. So you're flying, you're doing your first gig outside of the Air Force, really, after you find out you can't fly. It's kind of a bummer. I remember not doing exactly what I thought I wanted to do and going to do something else. And you're like, hey, all right. And sometimes the money's better and sometimes the experience is greater, but you still kind of look back on it with a little bit of, I don't know, you're a little pissed off or whatever you want to call it.
Bitter.
You know, bitter is a better
bitter at life. Yeah.
Yeah, bitter is a better word. So you're bitter, and do you think that's why it didn't click while you were first sitting there and moving your career forward, but you didn't take any real look at the GIS information stuff and go, you know what, maybe there's something here.
So it's funny. I might segue a second on this because I think it's important, right? For somebody that might be listening, the one sure. or two people that actually pick up on this. For me, I was bitter. Now, if you hear my train of thought, it's, hey, always be positive and looking for opportunity, mm-hmm. because it's in that positivity that you're going to find opportunity that you can seize. And if you're not positive mentally, if you're in a negative spot, if you're bitter, if you're salty, you can pass over opportunities that could change your life. Always.
Amen. So
I was trying to figure my role, bouncing around. I had a couple of smaller companies. I had a pressure washing company at one point when I left the reserve, and that was easy money. One of the other mechanics in my unit was like, dude, I could do driveways all day long for $150. You should totally get a unit. Went in and dropped like $15K on that, and realized about a year and a half into that, although I was making money and I was profiting, I hated it. I hated it. Yeah. So I sold it for liquidation prices and just left. Right. And that's where I rolled into the roofing imagery, the aerial photography company, working with roofing companies. And it was there that Robert Beckner of Green Roofing and Waterproofing, my second largest customer, said, Bobby, I was wondering if you could measure roofs from imagery. And I was like, I've never tried that, but you know, let me check it. So after doing some research and my due diligence, I ended up opening like this treasure trove of, holy cow, what is this? You can measure from imagery using photogrammetry. I'm an average intelligence guy, so I got to read a little bit slower than most people, but I was like, man, this is really exciting. So I realized that I liked aerial imagery, mm-hmm. That I liked the capability. I loved the idea. Really what was a turn on to me about the whole aerial photography thing was you have a mission when you're flying. You know, a lot of people have like $100 hamburgers and they fly aimlessly. They go to a place and that's their mission and they go back home. But for me, I was able to plot like 6 or 7 targets on the ground, fly to those locations, do orbits with my pilot, you know, boogie out, go back, process the imagery. And I was like, man, this is very much like a military mission. And sad as it is, that was my coping mechanism because I couldn't fly with the military. Now I was given an objective-based flying, which was, it was really nice to have. So yeah, I got into GIS from that one question. And it was just being open. It was being positive. And wanting to do the very best I could at, you know, to help and please that customer. So I'm still friends with Robert Beckner today. He's my alpha customer for Raven Spatial. And we work closely together. And, you know, here I am 10 years later, almost still pursuing that question.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Raven Spatial and what's going on right now specific to the company. So you start this brand new, never seen before kind of idea, and the current phase that the company's in and where it's going. Obviously there's a lot that you don't have to unpack the whole business stuff that there's what's going to be interesting to the pilots can vary, right? Like for me, it's the business side of the house. We've talked a lot about that, but you can go wherever you want with this, and please take as much time as you want to talk about the company and fill in all the gaps. You can go as deep in the business weeds as you want. You can stay light above that. But I think for me, is I look at it as I hear something like this and I go, you know, if I have an opportunity to make some extra money, especially with the chances of me getting furloughed, not having a job in 6 months, not having a job in 5 years, because the way things are going to work out for economy, this is not going anywhere anytime soon, especially if you can continue to bring more people into the fold and keep prices reasonable for every single person involved. And I think that's why when you have a company like this, it's cool to hear the business side of it, and it's cool to hear the end user side of it, and it's really cool to hear all the stuff in between. So please go wherever you want with that and meander. Give us your take on the Raven Spatial ideal and where it's going.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. So obviously the current state of the union, it's really difficult as a tech startup and a founder. Trying to navigate these waters. So, you know, if we were in Silicon Valley, it's a little bit different. You have money all around you. And those guys can really get funded if they've got the right connections pretty quickly. They move forward, they build their company, they might have rich parents or whatever. And, you know, when you have capital behind you, you can bring a team in, you can make mistakes, and then you can drive on, make this really cool product. But the problem that a lot of those companies have is finding that market fit that makes sense and finding the right model for them, right? So a lot of these companies come out half-baked, well-funded, and then they fold 3, 4, or 5 years down the road, or they hit an IPO that doesn't really go anywhere, kind of fizzles out. So on the East Coast, we're slow to get that funding. And it's an important thing here, you know, for anybody that is in the startup world, they'll understand quickly that it's very difficult to get funded in Florida. Your angel investors aren't generally in the market for drones or imagery or real estate investment even. So finding the right market to talk to the investors into is important. And I'm learning this stuff on the fly, you know, as I go. How do I talk to investors? How do I pitch the company? So what I've learned in the 2 years that I've been doing this is it's very difficult to find the right investors. It's very difficult to get a yes. I did at one point. We had a $100,000 check stroke to us from a company that does real estate lending. So that was nice, but it was hard earned. And, you know, nothing really followed suit after that. We use that to almost all of those funds right now to build what we're building. So the challenges of getting the company up and running and getting the capital for the team have been huge. So the next big thing is, okay, so now we have this pandemic, you know, and everybody's at home. We have to kind of change things. The investor money is kind of dried up and it's not readily available. So I can't go out and get a $500,000 raise as easily as I could say 3, 4, 5 months ago if I had a product developed. So now we have to shift. And that means that we have to go and take some customers, build some revenue, start getting this thing going, which we've already launched. We launched last week. We just took in a few jobs and we're building very small as we go to market and start the scale out. So with that, when we talk about what we're offering the pilots, what we're offering your listeners is this very crude concept right now of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So these guys that are coming in as the alpha users and test this thing out, we're going to be looking at some wonky processes in the beginning, but bear with us as we build this quickly out. There's definitely a market need. There's a demand for it. And I believe that we're going about this the right way. We definitely have a concept down where we can take this to scale and make it a big thing. So with that, what do we do? You know, what are we doing? What answer or what problem are we answering? I think is where we could start and just kind of dive in there. So I like to ask the question, if somebody's listening, right? Think about where you would go right now to look at, say you wanted to invest in a property. Where would you go to look at this property if it was 5 states away and you wanted to see it today? You wanted to see what was going on right now. Like who was parked in the driveway? What was the condition of the paint? What's the condition of the roof? All these questions might, you know, ring in your mind when you're, you know, looking to drop $150,000 to $350,000 on this house. Just a small range. The average house is $280,000, by the way, in the U.S. So what do you do? Where do you go? You know, right off the bat, people go to Google, you know, take a look at Google Maps. Well, Google Maps has satellite imagery on there that's months to years old. It could be anywhere in like a year and a half to 2.5 years on average in the United States. And it could be even worse in some areas, longer, older, and it could be a pretty low image resolution. So if you zoom on in this house, like the tiles aren't really that visible. So what are you really getting? So, okay, so go to Street View and take a look at that, where the car is driven around that neighborhood. Google will be the first to tell you. In fact, I've had a conversation with one of their chiefs of R&D that the Google car is not a scalable solution for them either. It's insanely expensive. It's not a great scalable concept for them. So you see Google Street View imagery that is years, years old. Our demo, we had this house just randomly, we pulled imagery for and we collected imagery on it. Google Street View imagery was 8 years old, right?
Wow.
Is that
8 years old?
Yeah, 8 years old. It was 2011.
Yeah, that doesn't do anybody any good. Yeah.
What does that do? You know, it gives you the idea of what the house looks like, but not today. And the time is a big thing, right? Mm. So we want to give the ability for somebody to put eyes on real time, because it's going to be a question in the investor's mind. Different investors have different needs, but it's a tool that doesn't really exist. There's nothing easily readily available for that. Started doing some research into the real estate investment market. My wife is a real estate attorney, talks to notes and mortgage investors. So these guys that go buy the debts on the real estate around in different markets all over the US. And that's what they do. They do due diligence. So they pull these things called broker priced opinions, where they get these sheets of how much the house is worth in the eyes of the realtor who went and did it. And then the comparables around the neighborhood. But still, the imagery is not that great. It's weak. Some people might even take imagery from inside of a car, like a picture on their phone inside the car. They don't get out. And then they post that to the BPO. And that's all you get as an investor.
It's probably, and I hate to date this podcast, but it's probably going to be more like that for the foreseeable future, not getting out of your car.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're exactly right. So, what we said was, okay, look, the drones are ubiquitous, or they're all over the place, right? And they're growing in demand. There were, I think in 2019, we had just over 870,000 drones registered with the FAA. There were 73,000 pilots last year as of May 2019, 73,124 pilots registered with Part 107 licenses in the U.S. And that number was increasing 1.5x every year. Back in 2017, I'm not doing the math on this. In 2017, there were only 24,000 pilots registered with Part 107 licenses. So the FAA is looking to make this Part 107 certification easier, which means for us that there's going to be more 107 certified pilots out there. A Part 107 license, by the way, for those who don't know, is just, it's a license that allows you to fly for compensation. And that's it. So you have a little bit different rules. They're starting to kind of unify with the recreational drone operators, but you get a 107 license, you can fly for compensation. So what we want to do is we want to, on a large scale, on like an enterprise scale, be able to take a company that maybe a REIT or capital management group that has thousands of properties in their portfolio and make an event-based trigger where they can pull up imagery for a property of interest in their portfolio in real time. And we do that by having people in the local area task out to go fly these things, right? So today, you take a look at the whole, say there's 100,000, let's just round up on, you know, an extrapolation. So 100,000 pilots have a Part 107 license in the FAA. Maybe 5,000 to 6,000 of those actually have businesses that are their primary function for income. A lot of the other guys are like hobbyists or super hobbyists where they have maybe a side business and then their primary business where they're flying on the weekends and fly by night or whatever it might be to earn some income, you know. But not a lot of people are, the majority of those people that are certified aren't doing this for a full-time business. And we recognize that, we see that. So we want to leverage the capability by having all these drones available, by having all these pilots available. If you put a 15-mile radius around each pilot in the U.S., you have 98% coverage in the United States for the populated areas. So we have pilot coverage all over the U.S. That's not a problem. We want to be able to say, like, hey, guys, if you bought a drone and you have it sitting in your closet and it's not going to use for you, we're giving you the opportunity. We do the marketing on our end. We go capture these customers that want standardized imagery all over the U.S. Mm-hmm. We want the ability to have you put your drone to use. Go fly. Like, you don't have to do anything to get this customer. We're just asking you to fly for us. And, you know, you don't put any time in. We give you a flight plan. We issue an automated flight plan on this app. And you go fly it. It's really easy. All you do is upload it and you press play. The drone goes and collects all that imagery automatically and lands automatically. You take the imagery, you upload it, and you get paid for it. You might spend 15 minutes on one location, and we pay you about $25 to $35 per those basic flights. And that's where we're at. That's the core concept of the drone imagery collection with a company.
I think you hit a couple things there that, to me, so I look at it, so I'll be the lazy pilot. Easy, money, and my schedule is my time, my choice. So I can do as much, as little as I want. Sounds like a lot of other models that are out there, gig economy-wise, that have been going on for the last couple of years, except the difference that I see with this style of approach is you are taking something that has been fairly untouched. And when it has been introduced in the past, but I can't remember who the company was. Now, this is not the same thing. It's not aerial photography or aerial imagery, but it was the company a couple of years back that tried to say, hey, let's do a ride sharing program for general aviators, private pilots. And we can go and do, so Sally's going to fly from, in my neck of the woods, Milwaukee to Appleton, and three people can jump on board her Cessna 172 and hail it via an app and all that kind of stuff. Well, it's like, nah, that there's a lot of regulation and law that they have to get through before that would ever pan out. And the liability insurance problems are through the roof. You have an accident, everybody's getting sued. So there's a lot of problems there. This does not have that same aspect. And I remember we talked a little bit about that kind of stuff when we were on the phone. And I think, to me, that's all fine and good. You can go over insurance liability. If a drone falls out of the sky, I mean, there are issues there. But to me, that's kind of the smaller scale stuff. Some of the bigger stuff that people, I think, would want to know about, much like that I remember that there was like four people or four companies right around there that came out all at the same time and said, we're the Uber for general aviation. It was like, no, they all fell apart. Do you guys have any people who are competing in this space right now that are somewhere around you guys?
Absolutely, we do. Yeah, there are two big ones out there right now with a very similar model. So DroneBase is the biggest one. I told you I was making this company in my ideative stage back in 2015.
Yeah,
and they launched this product publicly in 2016. Okay. This company is a Y Combinator startup, so Silicon Valley based. Dan Burton is the CEO. Is really good at raising money. Has a lot of strong connections in the industry as well as in insurance. Their main industry is insurance technology.
Okay.
So they're helping with insurance claims and capturing imagery there. Their whole focus is like they're an imagery source for the insurance companies, the different companies that are doing like big data for insurance policies.
Okay.
So yeah, but they do things a little bit differently than we do. And that I kind of attribute that to having this idea early on before they publicly came out and launched. It was one of those things where I'm working for a company and I'm watching my dream kind of fold out. Like it's one of those things like you can have a great idea, but somebody else is going to have it.
Yeah.
So Dan launches this company and I'm watching the news releases and I'm like, you have to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But as I saw them grow, they kind of went in this tangent and that was their business model. And I'm like, man, they're not doing what I was going to do. So this kind of leaves the door open for me.
Yeah.
The two big differences are, and you can, I don't want to knock them. That it's not sounding like this. It's just a value proposition, which, you know, drives us differently than they are, and points the differences out. So
sure.
I don't want to say this. It sounds like I'm knocking them. I have a ton of respect for Dan and his crew, but what they do is they take the customer request and they have a group of vetted pilots. So they'll take all these pilots in and run them through tests, run them through like qualification and standards. And then they'll take this customer requested area and they'll distribute it out to the group, and they'll basically say like it's a bidding system, right? You know, first come, first serve, or the lowest bid takes the bid. They have their own science behind that, but then they'll distribute that flight plan or that customer area to the pilot and say, you go create the flight plan, you go deconflict airspace, get us back the imagery because you're quote unquote qualified, we vetted you. That's one way to go about it. What we want to do is, I come from a crowdsourcing background with Digital Globe. My job there was to have laymen on Amazon's Mechanical Turk, which is a big crowdsourcing platform, annotate satellite imagery. And these guys were not satellite imagery analysts. What we learned there was the key to crowdsourcing is breaking down even like complex tasks to their most simple form so that anybody can do it, right? That's exactly what we're doing here. So we're taking that customer requested area, say, I want this house or I want this field and this farm. And we generate our own flight plan. We deconflict the airspace. We simplify that. We remove all those asks from the pilot. So literally all we're doing is saying, here's a flight plan. And we're pushing that to the pilot. And any pilot can do it in our crowd. We don't have to vet them. We don't have to qualify them because it's flown automatically. We just say, hey, make sure your drone is good to go and you're not flying in bad weather. There you go. They hit play, they go. So the ask for our competition using their pilots is much more than our ask with our pilots. And we say that we appreciate your time. We value your time. And this is lessons learned. We fly too. We've collected imagery. We're pilots. We're busy guys. And we just want you to get in, get out and make a few bucks. Imagine that, you know, you have a drone that you paid for and you in 20 minutes, 30 minutes with doing no work to capture any of the customer side, none of that, you can pay your, you know, family dinner. You're not going to go to like Bonefish or some nice restaurant and have a dinner, but for like $25, you can get, you know, you can feed your family. So if you're in tough times, that one meal might go a long ways for what? Just being able to download a flight plan and flying for us. And that's kind of what we're looking at.
Yeah.
So yeah, DroneBase and Hangar are the two that we're going to be competing with. DroneBase is probably like an $80 million valuation right now in their company. So they're doing pretty well. And they've been around for a few years.
Yeah. Well, just by the way you're talking, you're going to, I can see so much coming from this. I think you're going to get there quite quickly. I think the other thing that I wanted to hammer on here and talk about was something that we talked about on our phone, kind of when we talked before the show a couple of days ago, was and this was an ideal that really caught me. And this is what sparked so much interest, I think, in our conversation, right? Was you talked about drone pilot. And that term being something that is oxymoronic to some, a badge of honor to others, but doesn't fit the nomenclature for everybody. And you wanted to shed and cast some light and correct some mistakes on all that, because much like everything, and I agree, I think the term operator is more applicable to everything that a pilot does. Whether it's an F-35 pilot or a UAV pilot sitting in Creech, or even somebody who's going to be operating for Raven Spatial who hits go, and I think operator is a key term because we all operate something. And you and I had a really nice chat about that, right? Because you are a pilot. You've gone up and you've had your ass in the seat and said, oh, you know, if I auger this in, there's nothing's good's coming of this. So
I've been close, not the best pilot in the world.
Well, you've obviously not flown with me, but I will say this. To me, when you start to break it all down like that and you start to think in those terms, I think it's just it, for people who hold that close to them, it's like, okay, you know, you might need to get past that a little bit and move on to the next thing. But I do like that you noticed and appreciate that, yes, there's a stigma attached with the whole phraseology of drone pilot. And what are you trying to do with Raven Spatial that I think is awesome? Because I guarantee there's nobody else thinking about this, trying to detach stigma and make it more of a universal idea for everybody to go out and do something like this.
Yeah, sure. It's a new technology. I'm glad you touched on that. So thank you, Adam, for bringing that up. Obviously, if you've been in a chat room with other pilots, first and foremost, pilot, drone pilot, nerd, whatever you want to classify a user in that group, because we're all in there. Ego is a big thing. Whether we like to admit it or not, it's a really big thing. If you're a pilot, we are synonymous with big egos because we've done a lot, you know. So, and you've done more than I have. You got your different levels of pilots. You have your, you know, PPL to ATP. Mm-hmm. And that's a very high sense of accomplishment. As you get your next certification, you move on. You feel very proud of yourself, and you should. You should be proud of the title that you've earned. And, you know, pilot is something that is like an elite alumni, right? And then we even give each other shit. It's like being a vet in the military. We give each other shit for what we did in our branch of service. And, you know, it's sense of entitlement when you have that, title, right? Mm-hmm. But, so I guess there's a stigma around the drone pilot thing. And a lot of these, you know, pilots think that drone pilots are kids and, you know, they're not also pilots as well. Look, you know, at the end of the day, pilot's just a term. What you do in your life to make money and be happy, that's really what matters, mm-hmm. right? A term is just a term. That's it. And I think that as we go on, this is something that we're going to grow into. This is just a growing pain with a new technology. Mm-hmm. I think operator is a more accurate term. But again, a term is a term. And that's not really a big deal for me. We don't get stuck around the axle on that. Instead, what I see is, hey, these drones are tools. And if people started seeing the drone as a utility, mm-hmm. rather than a toy, and they actually saw what good they can do for mankind and put that to use in a tactical way, that's a game changer. And they're looked at a lot differently. So yeah, we need operators. We need pilots as operators. We need anybody that's able to operate a drone to go fly for us and capture that imagery that's going to make a big impact in different markets all around the US, around the world.
So Bobby, how can Adam with his drone sitting in the closet, not getting much use out of it right now, how can he go and do that right now? Like, how can I go fly for Raven Spatial?
Are you sitting in the closet, or is the drone sitting in the
closet? Let's see. Well, you know what? This is kind of like a big closet. It's kind of like a big closet with a lot of padding on the walls, which makes it really scary. But yeah, you could say, okay, no, the drone's in the closet. Adam's in a separate, very different closet.
So yeah, we right now where we're at, we have a sign up form. It's really rough, a generic way to go about it. But we're in the process of building a application, a web app, excuse me, called PayPixel. And PayPixel is the web application that you can register on. You register your drones, you register your location, your contact information, your email, and you'll be able to access a web map. And we'll publish our tasks as they come live from the customer on that portal, and very much like a scooter rental app that people are familiar with. It's a map based app. You can reserve a scooter for a certain amount of time. The same thing here. You can reserve a task. You can navigate to it and go fly the task and upload the imagery, complete the task, close it out, and we pay you. So to do that, I'll send the link to you and we can share it at the end of the podcast for, you know, for the viewers to click on if they're interested. What I'd say right now is as we're building, we're looking for the alpha and beta customers or pilots rather. So if you're interested, if you're curious, we would love to have you in. We'll send you a couple of sample flight plans. You can go fly them for us if you want. Check it out. See if it's something that you want to do. And then let us know. You give us some feedback. So as we, you know, in the next couple of months, I'd love to get, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 images across the United States, total flight plans flown, to be able to process that data and handle it. So when we go to scale, we can do this for everybody.
Well, I'm sure we can try to push this and share this to a lot more than just the pilot network. You know, that all the drone groups that are out there and stuff like that. And for those of you listening, please share it with who are in those groups and are hobbyists who want to be more than hobbyists. Go please share this and take it to the next level, because there's going to be a there's going to be a glut of pilots who want to do this at first, and then there's going to be a dearth of pilots because there's going to be so much work to go be able to do. When stuff like this takes off, it takes the next kind of step. And when that next step happens is when you have not enough people and too many tasks. It's just the standard, right? I mean, it's kind of the way business tends to work out. And then one day you kind of find a happy medium, and then, you know, global pandemic comes in and changes everything for everybody. I think that's kind of where we're at for a lot of us right now. And I want to say, you know, me personally, I find this very interesting. In fact, right before it was serendipitous. We used that word a few times in our conversation. I was talking with another friend of mine who does some investment work, and you know, we were talking about the pilot network and what we could do with it. And he was like, "Man, you know, why don't you start like a drone business or something like that?" And have, you know, he's like, "You probably got a third of them have drones sitting in their closet that they're not using and take air." And I said, "Oh, it's funny. I was just talking to my mother, who happens to work for a roofing company as a business manager. And they have no idea about aerial imagery and how to even utilize it. Like they don't even know the basics about it. And one of the owner's son has some very high level drones that he's been using for aerial imagery. And I'm sitting there, these guys don't even know about this stuff." And it started to click with me. I'm like, the amount of customers who have no idea that this even exists out there is fascinating to me. Because unlike some of the ubiquitous names that we hear, Uber, Lyft, Amazon, Grubhub, which wasn't that popular until right now. And now everybody knows.
Everyone knows who they are.
Everybody knows who Grubhub is. A lot of these things they're all household names now, but they weren't a while ago. And by a while, I mean a couple of years only. And for these contracting agencies, or I shouldn't say contracting agencies, but agencies that work with contractors and do a lot of construction business, they're not the most up to date when it comes to technology. Not a lot of them, especially the smaller ones. And for them to go out there and reach a wide swath of people in a very short period of time, not utilizing their resources and doing it at an affordable, reasonable rate, is something that they haven't even stepped to that level yet. And once they figure it out, and if Raven Spatial makes it as easy as you guys are planning to do so, this is that next gauge, that next step. And to me, that's where I'm always a big buy in early and sit back and wait. And then when things happen, it'll be great. You know, that's kind of what was my plan for the airlines. Well, that worked out pretty well. We'll see. But that's why I'm such a big fan of Bobby. I'm a big fan of Raven Spatial. I think this company has got a future that we're not even able to see, because it could do so much. There's so much out there. My brain runs crazy when I think about all of the opportunity and potential that exists across the market, the United States just starting, and then beyond that is quite remarkable. And the fact, and this is what really is something that I find, I don't know, near and dear, it makes me feel great inside a little bit, is that there's a good chance that many of our networkers who are drone operators, want to become drone operators, now have an extra reason to step their foot in that pool. If you can essentially buy a drone and have it paid off in 15, 20, 25, 15 minute spurts, to pay off a $700 or $800 drone. And then on top of that, it's just a little bit of profit. You know, you're coming home from a flight. Oh, the task. I'll just run by this place. And
you have to spend nothing in marketing to do
that. Nothing. Yep. And all you do is you have to spend a couple of thumb clicks on an app and that's it. To me, that's where the win is to help the network come back to that kind of state of going, you know what, especially in time like this, when a lot of us aren't really sure what the next phase of life is going to hold, and still keeping our foot. I know it's not the same thing, the aviation door. I get it. You can say what you want, but to be able to at least do something that you like or something that you want to enjoy and participate more and to go out and do, I think is really, really cool. And Bobby, I think that to me is the really exciting part.
I'm surprised that more pilots don't have drones, because you go to really cool places and you can leap there in a day. Yeah. And then you go and you take aerial imagery for fun and then put together like the photos down the road. Is one day you're not going to be able to fly anymore, and you're going to be able to look back on your memories and see something really cool.
Yeah.
So, I've always wondered why more pilots don't do it.
You know, it's funny you say that. I have a friend of mine, another guy that I know, a different guy, tanker pilot with me back in the day. And he actually was one of the first guys I knew who kind of got into just doing some of the aerial imagery stuff for fun. And I want to say he took this really cool image of, he overflew, I think it was a drainage lagoon or something like that, but it was this big water holding area. And there was this huge, massive pipe in the middle that where all the water ran off. And it looked like it was the abyss to nowhere, and the water fell over the side. And he used this really cool song that I actually added to like a running mix of mine. And it was really, really well done. And I'm like, how did you do that? He's like, I don't know. I took off and flew a drone over and I threw some music onto it. I'm like, it's like studio level production. He goes, that was like my second try, like figuring it out. And if you can do that and have that kind of memory and that cool image that you have for the rest of your life, I mean, just think what you can do once you figure stuff out and and think of all that on top of it and making a few extra bucks. To me, that's like the best deal there is.
I would say one thing here to tie back to one thing that we've already talked about, going back to the name, what's in a name? Not much. The experiences are what make you. So if you're a pilot, the thing to be proud of is what you've done in your life, and those are the kinds of things that you could really take advantage of.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I want to make sure that people understand that going forward too, especially in the current situation that we're in, remember that, like the great experiences that we've all had in aviation and the stuff that came out of it, whether it's the trials and the tribulations that paid off, in the cool things that we've gotten to do because we went through that pain and that process, or if it's the great friends that we've met or the wonderful stuff that we've gotten to buy, if you're into that kind of thing, or if it's just the fact that, hey, you've gotten to have the wonderful experience of on a cloudy day when everybody else looked up and all they saw was gray, you got to pierce the clouds and go see the sun and nobody else could. That to me, I always think to me is one of the coolest things about aviation is when it's a cloudy day, I know that if I'm going flying, there's probably a pretty good chance that I'm going to get to see the sun and nobody on the ground will that day. And I always, always thought really highly of that. It's something small, something simple, but when my flying days are done, that is something I will miss more probably than almost everything else, just because of that little nugget made me feel special. And I need that because, as you said earlier, ego is a big thing. And if you're going to start a podcast and a network and Facebook live feed yourself and Instagram, you probably have a bit of an ego, and I'll be the first to admit it. So
you're gonna face the heat too of people that hear this and immediately go, oh, a drone pilot is a nerd,
What let them bring the heat. I've I always have my foot just barely touching the boiling water, so I'm not too worried about it. Now I want to jump to our last piece here. It's one of my favorite things. It's cheesy, it's silly, it's ridiculous, but we have to do it because I want to. We call it the bold face or the memory items, depending what side of the house you live on, military or otherwise. And just three little questions. These were pre-given to Bobby, and I want him to answer kind of in that what people should take away from this episode. So the first, number one, is the one thing that folks listening to this podcast should take away about Bobby Quinn and Raven Spatial.
We need you. And I hope that you consider, with your qualifications, it'd be very easy for you to earn a Part 107 license. I would love to have you in our network if you're listening, and we would love your feedback and to help us grow and help us build something amazing. You're here early, and you could potentially have some feedback that changes the course of this company and changes the way that this product is handled throughout the country. So I would love to have you in our network. And this is a shameless ask. Sign in, log in, and become one of us.
I like it. Become one of us. It's very Borg-like too, which is, I'm a fan. I'm a big fan.
One of us.
Yeah. And then, so let's go to the Mr. Entrepreneur business side, Mr. Of Bobby. Something that you'd have told a young Mr. Quinn just starting out on this big journey that he must do.
This one is a hard one. I'm a candid guy. And in the beginning, I thought that I was like, man, everything was focused on having a great team and, you know, respecting each other and sharing trust and, you know, giving trust to people. You find out quickly in the early stage of the startup, especially when you're begging for money and capital and trying to move on, that things aren't easy at all. And the biggest lessons that I've learned are something that we haven't even talked about tonight, but it is what it is. So If you ever find yourself in a position where you're vulnerable to the people on your team, if you feel like maybe the people you can't trust on your team and you're affording them trust that they don't deserve based off of the vulnerability that you feel and you kind of feel without options, You are in a bad place. And that means that you need to change something massively, especially if you're the CEO in charge. So that's some insight into some of the things that I've gone through multiple times throughout my company. People will come in and take advantage of you. And you have very limited options. You have very limited runway. You only have a few mistakes that you can make before you're out of business. So if you find yourself in that situation, you need to remove yourself quickly, change the course of your company, and make moves rapidly. Yeah. Don't give people trust that don't deserve it.
Yep.
And then drive on. Always. You hear it everywhere. Drive on no matter what. One foot in front of the other on the worst days. And just keep pushing. Go forward.
Man, that applies to so much more than just being business. Because remember, especially in as the future drives on, which inevitably does every day, you are the CEO of your own life, right? And you're the PIC of your own life.
Yes.
And if you just let go of the yoke and say, it'll figure itself out. You know what? Life has a really, really, really awful autopilot. So it is actually worse than the KC-135 Block 30. So that is...
I can appreciate that being the avionics guy.
And that's kind of why I brought it up.
Yeah, we're good.
So I think hitting the last one here. Someone in a situation like yours needing a change of venue from the military, founder of a startup, going through these different business iterations from one that pays the bills and then some, to founding and starting your dream with a big risk reward attached to it. What should they be thinking about today, especially today? Because I think if you're thinking about it today in a situation that's unknown, the next phase is going to be, it's always easier, right? It doesn't get any harder than doing something during a crisis. So in your situation, what should they be thinking about today?
So if you're ready for that transition, the very first thing is the number one advice I give to anybody is be and stay curious. You have to be curious. You have to do your own research. Ask yourself questions that are kind of weird. You have Google. You have the best resources out there. Mm-hmm. Be curious. If there's a question, maybe there's an idea that you have that you want to pursue, be curious. Research the idea. Research the potential market that you're in. Ask away. One thing that the veteran community has that a lot of other people don't is we have resources upon resources, even for startups. We have several organizations out there that act as alumni. And if you are curious about becoming a founder, I'm always available to talk to. You can contact me. I can put you in touch with our network, and I can get you into companies like Bunker Labs that helps out veterans and businesses. So there's a brotherhood out there ready for you. But yeah, always stay curious. Answer your own questions. Do your own research. Don't let other people make the decisions for you. And don't let other people like steer you in a direction. Just be bold and learn always.
Couldn't have said it any better myself, because man, I couldn't agree more. I'm trying to do a little bit of everything in this time that I have, and realizing that I have to focus and channel my curiosity a little bit better, because then you get a lot more done and you actually accomplish the curiosities you satisfy some of the curiosities that you have, so you can move on to the next phase of it. And then they go deeper down the rabbit hole, right? Like, I've always been an amateur, that's not even the right term to use. I've been a novice physicist, and I enjoy physics quite a bit. So I do a lot of research on stuff that I have no business researching: quantum particle physics, string theory, you name it, the Fermi paradox, whatever you want to talk about in physics. And the one thing I notice is the deeper I go down the rabbit hole, the more interesting I get. The problem is with physics specifically, is I never stopped and started with just the fundamentals and the basics. I wanted to jump to the end. That was always my problem since the time I was a kid. I hated B through Y. I wanted to go A to Z. And I've learned my lesson with certain things. Unfortunately, physics is not one of them, but there's other ones that I have learned the fundamentals of. You got to do the fundamentals, move through A, B, C. And when I've done that, I've noticed with a lot of the stuff that I've done is the reward is so much greater than the payout is going through that fundamental process. So I think
I'm with
that,
you.
Yeah. I think, and you know what, it's be curious about the fundamentals, for me is something. Cause for one of the things that I'm into, jujitsu, and you cannot, self-directed and self-practiced jujitsu is not the easiest thing to do on the planet. I've rolled against a 43 centimeter ball, Swiss ball, that, you know, where it's me and the Swiss ball going at it, and I've gotten my ass kicked by it. And it's not a human being that I'm actually rolling with. However, that's all I have right now. My wife doesn't practice. She doesn't train jujitsu, and my daughter's 3, and she trains jujitsu with me, but it's also kicking in the neck and then tickling and laughing her head off. So I have to find a way to do that. So I have to find fundamentals to practice. And when I start doing that, I realize that I focused on these little fundamental things, and I can feel myself getting better at other stuff. Like, my brain works differently all of a sudden. And it's amazing how, if we don't always skip to Z and we go through each step, how your brain absorbs it differently. And then you become better at whatever it is you were intended to do anyways. So the journey really is sometimes the reward in and of itself. So
I gotta jump in and say one thing on that.
Yeah, dude.
I do the same thing. I get bored very quickly. I have ADD, right? So it's really hard for me to sit still. I've been doing it this long, which is not, you know,
fantastic. A good accomplishment
tonight. But what I do is I jump ahead, and mm-hmm. then I go, well, I don't know how I got here. You know, I have to go back, exactly like you said. So you go back. What I end up doing is when I learn the basics now, I go, oh, I can tie it to that down the road. I did that with GIS. I self-taught GIS, and I went through grad school for 2 semesters, and I did exactly that. I learned the fundamentals in grad school, where I was learning advanced stuff before that. Yeah. And I go, now I have reference, and the reference is a big deal. Yeah. But what I learned in that process is something that it was like, okay, this is introspection a little bit, but I always learn the hard way for whatever reason. And man, if that doesn't talk about the journey, because it bounced ahead and then I have to learn, I go backwards, retrospectively learn, or yep. retroactively learn. I'm always learning things the hard way.
Yep.
And if I can only just start from A and go to B.
Yeah. Cause it's like, it damned if it doesn't take longer. You know, if you just, it's funny. It's not a guy thing. It's a human thing. It's like, sometimes when you follow the instructions, now aside from, a couple of companies out there, like the fitness company that I got my workout stuff from, to assemble it, the worst instructions I've ever seen. But if you follow the instructions, it actually works if you follow them in order, and you know how the thing is built then and how it fits together. Well, that's pretty much nails it for life. So I think that tangent is exactly, I mean, dude, I'm right with you, man. And I think curiosity about Raven Spatial is what's going to drive a lot of our members to go check it out. So how do they reach you? How do they get to Raven Spatial website, and where else can they find you?
We'll provide all the links. Okay. So it's ravenspatial.com is okay. the website, and bobby@ravenspatial.com. If you want to reach out to me, I'm always available. I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. It's a little busy right now, so give me some time. And then we'll have the registration form up in the link when we post the podcast.
Yeah, we'll throw that on the show notes, and we'll throw it also in the Facebook group and on our page. And if I remember Instagram, I am a horrible Instagrammer. I am not good. I really got to work on that. I say that every single time, and who knows, it probably is not going to happen anytime soon, but oh well, we'll move past that anyways.
Go fight the good fight, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah. There's enough going on in where we're at, and to just focus on what we're doing there. And I think that's the good that we can do for the folks in the network. We can link them up with companies like Raven Spatial to go work together and, go make some dough, go have some fun, go chart the future of what GIS could be for all of those people out there who are going to need it in the future. So Bobby, I'm going to leave you with any other parting shots besides where to reach you. You already said that you have, and by the way, I've commented before, you guys have a killer website. That website is super slick. And I think that as it progresses, it's only going to get more, robust. And I'm a huge fan. That was like one of the first things I said to you. I remember I was like, dude, your website rocks.
Well, I appreciate that. It's funny, as we're recording this right now, it's down and I'm horrified. My Gmail is down. Everything is down because we just switched over a host. We changed a couple of team members, and so we're working on that now. I would say, at the very least, fly for us, try it out. It's some beer money, right? At the very worst, at the end of the day, we want to build our pilots in a cult like fashion. Where we want to connect with you guys. So it's not just a number. You're not just a check going out, from our accounting. We want to talk to you. We want to be in the community and involved in what you guys want to see and what you want to do. Sentiment is everything. And our crowd is our gas in the tank. So we want to grow with you. And we would love for you to grow with us. So let's make it a nice little relationship.
I love it, dude. We'll call all pilot networkers.
Yeah.
Go to ravenspatial.com where you can see all the great stuff Bobby and his team is up to. And if you need to hit up Bobby, again, that's bobby@ravenspatial.com, or find him in the network. He's there. You can throw his name on Pilot Network, and you know what? He might just come out, reach out, find you. If you need to talk to Matt or I, again, you can always hit us up at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org. You can also go to the Facebook page and send us a message there, which a lot of you have been doing recently. I thank you for your feedback, and thank you for correcting wrongs, and also just giving us a positive word of reinforcement, or an idea for something to go do and talk to a few people that are out there in TPN land. Also, I want to reiterate for those of you out there flying the line, those of you out there defending our nation, those of you out there who are keeping it real, keep doing so. Fly safe and be careful. These are different and odd times that we're living in, and we support you all. And I cannot wait to get back out there and fly the line with you. So again, keep that shiny side up near, greasy side down. Fly safe, everybody.